back and live, and tonight we are here with Ben Stephenson. I can't even say it. He's a lead investigator at Central Utah Paranormal, and it says you are a deputy at Millard County Sheriff's Office. So, and everybody gets a rare view on me tonight. I had a really rough week. So I don't have my green screen up. You get to see my clutter in behind. And I don't have my other shirt on, so. Anyway, Ben, I'm going to start off with a question I ask everybody. It helps for everyone to get to know you that hasn't seen your site or anything like that or seen your Facebook. What got you started in the paranormal?
All right. I would say, similar to many people, I had a lot of stuff happen when I was growing up, when I was a kid. Things that I didn't really understand, things that you'd see or hear, even being touched. But it really started when, as I progressed and got older, one of the biggest ones that pushed me to really dive in was my wife and I were staying at the Queen Mary. I'm sure you guys know where that is.
I've heard of it, yes.
Okay. But, so my wife and I get there the first night, and they have a book at the gift shop, and it's called The Hauntings and Spirits That Live Here, and it's passengers that have written their stories of what have happened to them there. And there was a second book that talked about the people that have been killed there and things like that. So my wife picked up the second one. And as she's reading it, we're going back down to our hotel, and she's like, oh my gosh, Ben, this is the room right across from us is where a man strangled his wife and his children and then killed himself in the bathtub.
Damn.
And she kind of joked about it. She made like a little Snapchat story in front of the door, like, holy crap, this happened right here and we're sleeping right here, you know? And anyways, something went wrong with our room. We paid for a better room or whatever, and so they moved us two doors down, but we're still by it. And that night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I wake up to my name, but I can barely hear it. It's like, Ben, Ben. And I wake up and my wife just takes this big breath of air, like, and I was like, what's wrong? And she was like, something was just choking me and holding me into the bed. And so I'm like, yo, shit, you know? So I jump up, I'm checking the doors. The padlocks are all still on the doors. And I go into the bathroom and I look at my chest and I have 3 scratches across my chest.
Wow.
And yeah, anyways, I put my shirt on so my wife wouldn't see the scratches. And what we believe is that it was, well, I guess I should back up. So I asked my wife what happened. She said, I thought you had gotten out of bed to go to the bathroom. I felt something crawl back onto the bed. And then that's when it like sat on her chest and like started pushing her neck down. Mm-hmm. So we thought it might be one, the husband, because she was like mocking him in front of the other door.
Yeah.
Or at first it might have been the children running for safety to her as the woman. And then they scratched me because I was the man when I woke up. I don't know. That's just our 2 theories that we have. But that's what really pushed me back in.
Cool. So is that the only experience you've ever had, or have you had others?
No, I've had others. I've had some pretty crazy ones. Yeah.
Feel free if you want to explain any of them.
Okay. So when I was 22 years old, I'm 31 now, so it was about 8 years ago.
You're still young.
Eight or nine years ago.
Still a puppy.
But me and a friend were living in California, in Placerville.
Okay.
And I remember that night. So we had, I mean, our apartment was tiny. We split the rent. We had two twin beds, and mine looked out the window, and his looked into like a, it was like a the master bathroom. And so I'm laying there in bed, and he's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Stop touching my leg." And I was like, "Dude, I'm not touching your leg." And so I start hitting the wall that I'm laying by, and he's like, "Dude?" And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Something's in the bathroom." And this is, I wish I would have seen it, so I'll describe it as he saw. But I see the light fill the room fill up with this green light, and he's looking at whatever this is in the bathroom, just, you know, just staring at this thing. And I'm like, "Dude, like, you got to get up and turn on the light. Like, you got to turn on the light. I don't want to turn around." You know, he's like, he was frozen. And he just keeps saying, "Dude." I'm like, "Grow a pair of balls and turn on the light." So he jumps up, turns on the light, and it's gone. But we go in the other room because he's freaking out. So we're sitting on the couch, like, opposite of each other. And I'm just looking at him like, "What was it? What happened?" And he was like, "It was green. It was floating. It had yellow eyes. And it looked like that little monster from Scooby-Doo." And there were no drugs involved. There was no alcohol involved. But I wish I could have seen it, but I did see the light. And it was this dull, green, hazy color. Like, it wasn't bright, but it was dull enough to still light the room like a black light.
Right. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that one had me.
Sorry, Joe's having issues over here. I think somebody's playing with his lights.
Yeah, she had a, she's got it all stinking in here too, because she had to give the dog a flea bath.
Ooh.
Mm.
That's a real kind of a stench.
Well, no, it actually smells like peppermint.
Really?
Yeah.
It must be a different one then.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Ash.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Joe.
No, it's just, yeah, Joy was going nuts, biting her tail, so she gave her some kind of sprayed her down.
Oh, okay.
And it just stinks all the high heaven.
So Ben, what piqued your interest in the being a sheriff or a sheriff deputy?
So where I work, I don't work out on the road. I don't have a truck. I don't pull people over. But I didn't want to do that. So I feel what I do now really fits my personality. So I got my degree in criminology. And in doing that, I got to work. It wasn't really work. Like, I did a volunteer service at a teenage correction facility as like a counselor, and I really liked helping the kids. I thought maybe we could, you know, help them make a change when they were younger before they got older, you know, and ended up in the larger ones. And ultimately it came down to two things. It was either you wanted to kill their parents because they didn't care about their kids. It was a lot of rich families, rich kids that would send their kids to these places, or the kids would act out because they didn't get to do anything at home and they just wanted to come hang out. But I was offered a job in Millard County, where I grew up, as a corrections deputy there, and I really enjoyed that opportunity. So now I try and help adults overcome their addictions, help them make game plans for their future to get out of the mess and get back into real life.
Right.
Well, some of those are lost causes, though.
Some are very difficult.
When they become adults, when they become adults, they can be lost causes. When you catch them young, you can actually mold them in the right manner.
See, I wouldn't want to do what you did, or do. I wouldn't want to be in the corrections part of law enforcement, you know, because I feel a lot of those people, they get institutionalized. You see it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially where I'm from in Madison, you'll see these guys. I mean, there was once guy finally got arrested because he killed somebody, but he got convicted of 13 DUIs in like 5 years. And he kept out on the street. He kept getting his deal.
Yeah.
Getting caught. It's like,
unfortunately,
how are you going to fix that unless they admit that they got a problem in the first place?
Yeah.
Yeah, true. But unfortunately, that's one of the main problems with Wisconsin whenever the DUI is like that. They don't ever let them, they don't ever do what they need to do to take care of the problem. They just let it continue. I've heard of people here getting 11 and 12 DUIs before anything ever drastic happened to them or for them.
That's a bunch of BS.
Let's not get on that. We're here for the paranormal thing, right, to let this young man have his say.
So, is it just you on your team, or is there more?
So there's actually three of us right now. There's myself and Randy. Randy is my co-lead. Me and him, like, I founded it years ago, like late 2017, but I never had anyone to do it with me. It was just me. So I had all these things set in motion and put together, but I never made them public. I just kept doing stuff by myself, or like word of mouth kind of stuff. And so when Randy came along, we made it official. You know, we made the shirts. My wife made the logo.
I like those shirts. Those are kind of cool.
Thank you.
You picked the right kind of font for this business.
Yeah. I owe all the credit to my wife for this one. But then we also have now one of my friends. Her name is Stephanie. She does crystal work. She's really good at communications, using pendulums, and she's really sensitive. We can go walk through different areas, and she can pick out the areas of the home or the area that we're in that need the attention, and that's where we get something every time.
Yeah, it's always nice to have sensitives with you to be able to help out with stuff, because they can pinpoint the areas that the stronger energies are in. So what kind of equipment do you guys use?
So me and Randy actually kind of split the equipment down the middle. I would say we're more communication based. We try and find out exactly what's there, what's going on. Is it something we can take care of, or do we need to contact other people that need to take over in that kind of a situation? But I built my own portal about 6-7 months ago, because I didn't want to pay $800 for someone else to make me one. But,
well, if you got the know-how, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, I'm a guitar nerd, so really, even making a portal, it's just some guitar theory with a couple of guitar pedals and a speaker, and you've got a portal instantly.
Cool. Do you do any EVPs?
Yes. I've really only had... I mean, you don't get something every time you go somewhere, but I'd still say 90% of the time we can get some really good EVPs at the places that we've been. We actually helped a woman here in town maybe 5 months ago. She called us and was telling us about this home that they live in and things that they've seen and had happen. And her little girl really wanted to help with the equipment and stuff. And so I was like, okay, here's an EMF reader. Like, we're just going to walk around. And I kind of told her what to do. And as we're walking through the house, we get into one room in the basement. And I instantly, like, I was like, oh, like, this is the room. and we hadn't had any hits on anything, and we get in that room and it just red, stays red. And she's like, what does that mean? And I was like, that just means the machine's working. I didn't want to scare this little girl, you know, she was like 7. And so we go back upstairs and they have me go back down to this room, and I was able to just have like a dowsing rod session, and I pulled out my portal that I had just made. I'd only had it about a week. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what I got. A voice 3 times. The second time, the second thing that was said was her name, which is Harmony. And I didn't get it until I got home. And so I'm sending her like a recording that I had made. I took out like all the background noise and just spiked it as high as I could. And she thought it was her father's voice, just letting her know that he was there.
Yeah, that's a good possibility.
It was pretty awesome. But I mean, was it his voice? I don't know. But
usually when, you know, somebody has been that close, like father, daughter, whatever, you know, brothers, siblings, you know, they're going to know the other one's voice, you know?
Yeah.
And I would think that it probably sent chills down her spine too as well, maybe made the hair stand on her arms and stuff, because if it was actually his voice, yeah, that would freak me out a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it was instantly emotional for her when I shared it with her.
Yeah. Makes it that much more believable.
Yeah, it does.
You know, because there are a lot of scammers out there for when, you know, say, hey, come check this out, my, you know, and then you find out that they're trying to just screw with you or something.
Yeah.
You know.
So I guess you don't jump at anything that you catch right away, do you? Just, or do you try to like debunk it or mm-hmm. figure out what it actually is? Or
yeah. Okay. Especially if things are moving or things like that. I, for one, have never caught on camera like a spirit or anything like that. We've caught motion with our SLS camera.
Okay.
But yeah, we always try and go through and debunk whatever it could be first. If they're experiencing lighting issues, and checking the electrical wires, right, checking the boxes, because it's not always just, oh, demons and shit. Oh no!
Right. Right.
My first thought when you was talking about the EMF meter spiking when you walked into that room is, was there any electrical equipment in there? Was there any kind of electrical wires running through the ceiling?
Or? Yeah, no power. That room had no lighting. None of the outlets worked. And that I went in again, like when I was just down there by myself, and scanned the area again, and I didn't get anything when it was just me.
Now you pretty much stick to Utah?
Yeah, I'd love to travel, but with my line of work, it's hard to get time off. And so usually when we go on a vacation or something, I take my stuff with me and we find something to do in that general area.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You can tie it in with your vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I did that once. I had fun from the road.
Yes, I know you did, Joe. So what's one of the most intriguing ones that you've actually had happen to you?
As far as during an investigation?
Yeah.
So we do quite a few places that we can't necessarily give a lot of details as far as where it is. We have some clients that are very private. But we had one in particular, and I can tell the story. I just can't go into details on where we were.
Nope, but that's quite fine.
But it's one of our I grew up with his son, and it was his wife that contacted me. But where his father's business was, he now has not only his kids, but now his grandkids working in there too. Okay. And the kids were always nervous to work in there. This felt uneasy and kind of creeped out, kind of weird. And now the grandchildren are saying the same thing. And the dad had worked in there for so long, he was kind of numb to all of the things that would happen there anyways, because he'd been a part of it for so long.
Right.
And so he would hear his name. Things would move. I can't remember what else they would hear, but they would hear different people's names that coincided just with his family. Other people that would come and work there from the high school or other kids would feel uneasy, but they would never have the voices. So I feel like the voices were very, what's the word I'm looking for? Just contact would only be made with family.
Okay.
If that makes sense. But
no, it does. It does.
So we get there, and it's me and Randy. We're the only ones that were really active then. Stephanie hadn't joined up yet. But we get in, and the owner takes us on a tour. And Randy is, I feel like all three of us are pretty sensitive, but Stephanie and Randy are very sensitive. And so we walk in, and Randy's kind of just rubbing his chest. Like, you can tell he's feeling something, but he doesn't want to say anything in front of the business owner. And so we walk through, go through everything, and we come back together and we set up our devices in different areas of this business. And I'm over, and this is a big business. This is like a business attached to a warehouse. It's massive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm 150 yards away from Randy, and all the lights are off. He killed the power to everything. So we're running off of generator batteries and just our flashlights. And so I hear, "Ben, Ben!" So I'm like, "Oh, crap. Like, he just hurt himself. Like, I thought he fell over. He was yelling like he was hurt."
Right.
So I go running through the warehouse and the business to go find him. And when I get to him, he's just like, "Dude." Randy's like a surfer dude, the best way I could describe him. And so I get in there, and he's like, "Dude, you need to hear this." And I was like, "Okay." So this warehouse is kind of by a farm, and he said he's over here doing a he has one of those really nice recorders that most people use for like recording guitar, or just really nice recorders. I love it. But it has a little tiny speaker on it. Mm-hmm. So when you listen to it through his speaker, it's kind of garbled. So when we're listening to it on his, he says, "My name's Randy. I come in peace. I'm just here to visit with you." And on his little recorder, it sounded like a moo, like a meh. I was like, "There's no way in hell you just got like a ghost cow. Like, there's no way." And so we hook it up into a portable speaker that I had carried in my pocket, and it cleared it up, and it was this and we both just got chills instantly. So we're running back to where we set up. My friend's wife was there with us in case we needed help getting anywhere. And so we take you back to her, and we're like, "Hey, this is like, we'd only been in there 20 minutes. And like, we've got this crazy EVP." And so Randy's telling her the story. He's like, "I was over here by this area. This is what I was saying. And I heard something grunt behind me." When you hear the recording, it sounds like an old man grunting. And so he plays it for her, and she's like, "Ah, that doesn't sound familiar to me." But she also had only been married into the family for a few years too, so right. not that it would sound super familiar to her hearing it. But anyways, we go back through, and Randy's like, "Hey, text the owner, just let him know we got something if he wants to come listen." So we do, and while we're waiting for him to come over, me and my friend's wife are trying to do a dowsing rod session and ask some questions. And we're not getting anything. Like, they won't work for me, which never has happened to me. They wouldn't work for her, which a lot of times when people use the dowsing rods, it'll work or it won't. Mm-hmm. And so Randy, while we're waiting for the owner to come over, he was like, hey, I have an idea. Why don't, when he gets here, why don't you hold him, pointing at me, and have him ask the questions? I was like, that's a good idea. Like, it's worth a try, you know? And so, sure enough, he gets here, and we show him the recording, and he's like, oh, that sounds familiar. But he's also been hearing these voices there for years and years. And so we go into this other area where the recording was obtained, I guess you could say. And I go in the middle, and I'm holding my dowsing rods, and I train it. And they trained for me, which they wouldn't do earlier. And I looked at the owner, and I was like, okay, you're good to ask questions. Just make sure they're yes and no. If you get uncomfortable at any time, we can stop. Just, like, let me know. And he was like, okay. And so pull out the make sure all the recording equipment and everything was going. And he asks, is there someone here with us? And they cross really fast. And I was like, okay. Like, that was a hard yes. And he said, okay, thank you. And they went parallel again. And he said, Mom, is that you? And they stayed. They kind of shook and stayed at what I know is no. And Dad, is that you? And they crossed. And it became very emotional for him. He instantly just... it was like he knew that that was his dad. And then he said, they went parallel again after we, you know, said thank you. Always very respectful during our communication.
Yeah.
And was that you that made that noise? And they crossed again for yes. And as this conversation went forward, a lot of people associate the weather around you as like cold when you're having these kinds of experiences, but we were warm. Everyone was warm. It was like there was just a fire going between all of us, and we were just sitting around this bonfire. And as he continued to ask questions, the basic responses that we received were that it was his father. He wanted him to know that he was proud of him and that everything was okay on the other side, that he was with his mom. And then it became very emotional for the owner at that point. He said, I need to stop. Like, I can't do this anymore. And so we all said goodbye and ended the investigation there. But it was the first time I've had a spiritual experience at a place that where they're hearing voices and they're having things move. It was just, I want my son to know that I love him and that I'm proud of him. And his dad had been gone. I had never knew his dad, so at least 30 years.
Wow. So one of our viewers here, Tom, he had a question that he threw out there. Don't know if you care to answer it.
Okay.
But what are your thoughts on paranormal possessing criminals?
As far as being possessed by demons, things like that.
Tom would have to answer that part.
So I have seen people coming off of drugs, like copious amounts of drugs. Meth, heroin, bath salts, all three.
That would be like seeing something from The Exorcist, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. And we had... Well,
I've gone through morphine withdrawals, okay? Because I got put on a drip machine, and then I got taken off of it cold turkey and sent home.
Well, that will kill you for days.
Yeah. So that's got to be pretty close to what some of them people go through when they go through some of them withdrawals, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. So the behaviors that I've seen, after a week, if they're still continuing... then one, you know, we always go towards mental health. And if mental health can't find anything wrong with them, it's hard to say. Like, we had one guy, he would just ramble. Like, he would write things on the wall, but it would just be scribbles. And then when something meaningful would come up to him, his hand would spike. And he'd usually, like, start cursing or, like, talking about Mary or Jesus in very profane manners. But when you'd sit there and watch him, he'd be scribbling. And then when he'd, like, rake his pencil up really fast was when he would be saying those things. It was like even just saying God or Christ or anything like that would, like, give him a reaction.
I've where seen the other like things that out on the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just out on the streets, you know. Just you wouldn't be able to tell anyways, because, you know, criminals sometimes can get smart, and you can back me up on this, I'm sure. They're going to try to play this like psychiatric card to try to get out of it or get into a lesser secure place, or, you know, like a psych ward or whatever of a hospital, instead of being locked behind the bars. You know.
And that's kind of what corrections has turned into, because they need more help for these people with these mental health issues, but they don't want to deal with it, so they just shove them in jail. And then you're making their situation worse. They're not getting any help. And most of the time, because they'll be violent, they end up living alone. So there's no social interaction. There's no one to really talk to them, except for the voices that they're already hearing.
And that can be pretty rough.
Yeah.
Oh. So, but anyway.
No, go ahead, Joe.
Is that all you go, you know, you sit there, the paranormal world's got a whole lot. You know, you've got UFOs, you've got the cryptids, you've got the spirits, you've got all kinds of unexplained things. Do you look into any of the other stuff than just the spirits and the ghosts?
Yes, we do. I think everyone has a UFO story. Like, I bet both of you probably have a UFO story.
Well, I've got like three or four.
Yeah.
And we've seen our fair share of pictures sent to us that know, if you know the areas that they've been sent from, you know that some of it can't be explained.
Yeah. Like, I only have one UFO story, personally, but as far as cryptids go, around here, it's kind of a sensitive topic, depending on who you talk to. A lot of the Native Americans here like to keep to themselves, but there's lots of stories of, I can't remember their exact name for it, it's like Yi Naldalushi, basically.
Sounds like Wendigo or a
shifter. It's basically a skinwalker. I think the direct direct translation is he who runs on four legs. But
sounds about right.
But yeah, there's a lot of that around here. Towards around the reservations, like, we're only 50 miles away from Skinwalker Ranch. Like, we have a lot of crazy stories as far as that goes, but the people that you want to hear the stories from won't talk about it, because they believe that then that will target them and their heritage and their family. So it's dead silent unless you hear it from someone that's had the experience themselves outside of the reservation.
Right, because they keep it to themselves. They'll tell the story to their, you know, brothers, sisters, people around the bonfire at night, you know, like they do. Yeah, but they keep it within that tight circle, that tight circle of people there. Yeah, and that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, I know a guy that's like true Native American, and yeah, he doesn't like talking about it too much, but he was going to give us a tour of some of the effigy mounds and burial mounds around the area and tell us some of the stories he's heard, you know, growing up.
Yeah, I have quite a few friends that are Native. Like, I've been on the reservation myself. I have a few of them that are very supportive of our team. They've bought a couple sweaters and shirts from me. Cool. But that's one of the things I've wanted to do, is be invited to actually do some things on the reservation. But I also respect not ever being invited, like, because that is right. That is their place, and if they don't want us to mess with any of that kind of stuff, then we won't, period. Well,
they've got enough stolen from them as it is.
Amen.
You know,
yeah,
you know, but you know, that's one thing that I guess we don't have a whole lot of that around here, because the Native American history is rich, but it's a lot of casinos, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple of reservations left around that I know of, you know. But the cryptids here, there's so many. The cryptids here, they talk about them all the time, because there's a lot of people that have seen them. They end up in the local papers a lot. Like, there's been, like, the Bigfoot sightings down by the Kettle Moraine Forest, which is in the south-central part of Wisconsin. And then the Beast of Bray Road, that's been a big one. Or Michigan Dogman. You know, which is basically the same thing. But I've got my theories on that one, because I think that that could be a misidentification of something that's just kind of like the panther. You know, it's a rare find. You know,
yeah.
I think there's a, like, a hybrid of a wolf that is just bigger than a normal wolf that people are seeing. You know, and there's plenty of them around, and plenty of ways that could have happened. But who knows? I mean, we went down to the Beast of Bray Road, which is a pretty famous story here in Wisconsin when it comes to cryptids. And we got a lot more than we bargained for when we showed up at this place. You know, and yeah, it was amazing, you know, the stories we got.
Yeah.
You know, that's still a project, a work that's in progress yet. You won't find that anywhere on our YouTube pages, except for when we drove down there one night.
Well, that was another thing I was going to ask you, Ben. Are you able to, or have you published any of your stuff, like, on YouTube?
Yes. That's where I feel like YouTube is a whole other monster. It is so hard to conquer YouTube. But we do so much private investigations for businesses, families, and that don't allow us to share our video. So what me and Randy started doing was we started investigating historical sites around within a drivable distance. And we also want to do a video series in Fillmore. It's here in Millard County, but there's one block that is super active. It has the original state capital of Utah. Fillmore was actually the original state capital before they changed it to Salt Lake, because we didn't have enough water. But that whole block, there's the Territorial State House, which had a jail underneath, was offices, and then the top floor was like judge and jury, but they've turned that into a museum now. There's an old school, the old library, it used to be a hospital, an old hotel from like early 1900s. They'll smell men's cologne, perfume, and a Legion Hall that's run by the older retired men of the Armory or the National Guard. But there's just that one block has so much stuff. So we're going to do each building that will allow us to, we're going to do a documentary inside each building.
Cool.
Well, that'd be cool.
And then show a history of that area.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, most of when you go to our YouTube, the videos you'll see are 90% outdoor investigations, which we still have maintained some pretty awesome evidence from. Yeah. And also our last home investigation that I talked about earlier about Harmony, she allowed us to post that one. She was actually super excited about that.
Well, yeah, I find that some people are excited about when you find stuff for them and stuff. And then there are others that they don't want you to post anything until
they don't want the attention.
But they don't want you to post anything until they actually approve of what you're posting.
We're still waiting on the Halloween footage.
Yeah, we're still waiting to see what's going on with the Halloween stuff that we did. So we've got a lot of that too.
We did an investigation into an arts mill, and we went with another paranormal investigative team, and then another podcast actually joined us as well. So there was like a whole group of us in there.
That's fun.
Yeah. So it was like a big event, but. We're waiting for, I don't know what we're waiting for yet. We're waiting for some kind of approval so we can post the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but it was kind of interesting. And here, you probably had this happen to you too. You know, you're going through a building or you go through some place, you know, and you're just walking, because I was walking out, people were walking back, we're walking outside to go have a smoke. And I'm glad I wasn't alone when this happened, because then I'd go up and people would be like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah.
You're just nuts. But we're walking down, there was like three lights in the hallway. And if you use the switches, all three of them turned on at once. All right. But they were off. We're walking down to go have a smoke. We get right to the middle light. And it comes on, it flickers at us. Just the middle light flickers. That's it. And the lights were off. And I didn't have a camera or a body camera or anything. But I wasn't alone, at least. You know, it was Tom was the guy that made the comment here earlier. Yeah, he was with us. He was walking with me when that happened. So it wasn't like, you know. But I could have just. I just like, damn it, I wish I would have had a camera, you know, when that happened, because it's like some of the coolest stuff happens when you're least prepared for it.
Every time.
You know, I mean, I was riding down the road and I'm looking at I had my phone in my hand. Every phone nowadays has got a camera on it. And I get over this, we get over the bypass and there's this great big huge bird that just totally out of place, sitting on a street sign. And, you know, and it's one of those like highway signs that's at least 6 feet long or more. So that wingspan was at least 6 feet. And it was all black. And it was nothing that I've seen native to the Wisconsin area before. But I couldn't, you know, by the time, you know, you're doing 55, 60 miles an hour, you know, too late to get a phone up there. It's like, why didn't I have the dash cam? You know, I should have just been out with a dash cam hooked up that day. You know, because I got one of those, but I just can't get it to work right. Yeah.
Well, maybe you got to be a cop in order to have it to work right for you.
I don't know. Those days are long over for me.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, they don't let long-haired hippie cops in anyway.
Hey,
I'm always picking on him, Ben.
I'll tell you what, a lot of my friends that actually became cops that I went to police science with had longer hair than me. You know?
Yeah.
And a couple of them kept it that way because they were, you know, they do the Mel Gibson thing and put it back in a ponytail.
Mm-hmm.
I would have cut it to keep it above the collar because that's the rule, you know.
Yeah, that's what.
You know, I know all those rules. I didn't quite make it there, but I did work in the law enforcement field. Well, kind of. I was a top-rated security officer for Pinkerton, and I was also a private investigator for a while. So, you know, I worked close with a lot of the local Madison police officers for a long
time. That's the fun stuff.
It can be. I worked one... where I had a burn, I ended up having to burn my uniform, and I couldn't get the fucking stench out of my car either.
Oh, that's terrible.
The central storage warehouse fire took place in Madison about 27, 28 years ago. And I was a supervisor. I was a sergeant. And I got called to work there. So the smell got in. And it was all this government, the warehouse that burnt down had all this hot dogs, government hot dogs, butter, and cheese. So all of that melted and created a river that went on for like blocks until it got to this off-ramp area, and it created a big lake, and it stunk for years in that area. But I could never get the smell out of my car, and I had to burn my uniform, you know, and throw away a good pair of like $25 boots, you know, work boots, you know, because that stench was so bad.
It was nasty.
Yeah, but think about having to be there when you were working it, right after it happened.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's when it's real bad. You got to make sure that nobody comes and goes that's not supposed to be there. Because the whole thing was under investigation. Because the fire started because of a faulty forklift. But then they were trying to determine whether or not it was arson or not, because somebody might have screwed with the forklift.
Mm.
Yeah.
A little sabotage.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, that's not unheard of. You know, a little sabotage for a little insurance money.
Disgruntled worker. Yeah. Oh.
So in your time as being a deputy sheriff, is there any of that you can, like, strange crap that you can say about that, or?
It's there, but I can't really talk about
that's
it.
That's part of the paranormal.
Yeah, it's there, but it's still one of those things I can't really talk about.
That's fine. That's
sadly.
Fine.
Give me about 19 more years.
Yeah, but having that kind of connection,
paranormal stuff.
Having that kind of connection, being a corrections officer, it ought to get you into some of those so-called haunted jails and stuff. Pretty easy access to some of those old abandoned jails and stuff that are all over the U.S.
There is one right now in Utah. If anyone wants to buy a jail, it's $3 million. But it started at about $6.5 million and didn't sell. So they're just like, fine, chop it in half. Still didn't sell. So they cut another $500,000 off. Still hasn't sold. So I figure when it's about $300,000, I'm going to own a jail.
Is it considered haunted?
All the stuff that happened there, like, yeah, it's got to be. I can only imagine half of the things that...
Have you tried to find a way of convincing them to let you go in and do an investigation in it?
I've actually tried to... I have some... I have some connections there just through, you know, friends, police academy, things like that. But my ultimate goal is to see if we can somehow do an event there, like after all this virus stuff is over, if it still hasn't sold, and make a deal with the city, like, you're trying to sell this building, we'll give you X amount of this money from what we make doing this. Because we're a free service, you know, we don't charge anyone
anything. Right. Exactly. We do the same.
So if we were able to do an event and just bring people on an adventure with us and do it to help their community too, I really think it'll work out that way. But when I tried to talk to him about it, it's like, well, obviously not right now. So just kind of waiting.
Yeah, that does kind of put a damper on everything. That whole COVID thing.
Yeah.
This has been such a nightmare for everybody, as this COVID. It's such a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And what's even worse of a pain in the ass is, like, being an essential worker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, hi.
Yeah, hello.
I'm considered that because I deliver dry ice. Mm-hmm. And... the dry ice is used in keeping food product cold. It's used in keeping medical stuff cold. It's used in laboratory use, and so yeah. And then right now, I guess our company is freaking out because now we've got three different companies out there that have the vaccine, and they're looking at transportation and storage of this, and they're looking at us for dry ice. And currently there's a slight shortage in the dry ice field because of oil being so low, because most of the liquid CO2 we get comes from ethanol plants, and the ethanol plants are all shutting down because it's cheaper for oil to make gasoline from oil than it is to make ethanol from corn or switchgrass or anything else. So, yeah. So it's kind of hindering a lot of things right now, unfortunately. So anyway, you did mention you have YouTube. Did you want to let us know what the site name is or the YouTube channel is?
Yeah, no problem. It's just Central Utah Paranormal. It's the same logo that I have on my shirt right now.
Okay. But it's just Central Utah Paranormal. It's not investigations with it or anything like that?
Not on YouTube. For some reason on Facebook, there's two Central Utah Paranormals. So mine has dots on it. The other one is just they share paranormal experiences around Utah. And I had already created this name before I saw it there. So I was like, well.
Yeah, that kind of is a bummer.
Yeah, so ours is the one with the dots, and you'll see the little ghost. That's ours.
All right, Joe?
I had it here. Now, where did it go?
I don't know. You take over for a minute, Joey. I got to go use the restroom quick.
I was trying to get this to share, but it didn't share. I brought it up. Okay, sorry about that. There we go. Now I did it easier. That's it, right there.
Yep, that's us right there.
And you just hit the subscribe like that, people. Help them out.
Thank you. We really do appreciate it.
YouTube's a pain to try to get things unlocked on. You got to get a lot of subscribers.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think some people realize that.
And that's the hardest part, especially when you're actually sharing real evidence and you're not just doing stuff theatrically for YouTube.
Or for try to get on TV.
Yeah.
You know, I try to watch. I don't want to cut any of them down because I would like to have some of them as guests someday. That's like a goal, because this whole COVID thing is what turned us into doing the interviews with paranormal, you know, people from the paranormal world. But some of those shows were a big joke in my eyes. You know, because, and then some staged. Of it is it's just edited for entertainment purposes and ratings and to make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go out 90% of the time, we don't find nothing, you know, or we can debunk what we found, but we still put it up there and let you decide for yourself, you mm-hmm. know. We don't make any determinations on anything that we find, even if we do find something, you know.
Yeah.
We let everybody else come up with their own opinion that way. You know, we've had some interesting things that happen that unfortunately don't get filmed either. Like, you know, we go out to this, what was that called? Astalon State Park, the first time we went out there.
Yeah, and that was when we were fairly new with our cameras, too.
This was last year, early last year. And we sat there and we had the EMF meter going off. It was just going nuts. Nothing could be setting it off in this area where we were.
Yeah, this place we went to is it's like burial mounds, like three or four burial mounds.
There's a story about a princess.
Sorry, Joe. There are no power lines or anything running under the ground or going overhead, so there shouldn't have been any kind of hits happening on the EMF meter.
Not like that.
But we were getting a hit on the EMF meter. It was spiking out, and we were on the edge, on the steps part of one of the burial mounds. And I was filming. Joe had the meter, and he set it down on the step, and we actually filmed it for probably about 2 minutes or so that way, with it just peeking out and going off. And then we continued on with the day. I filmed more, but when he took it home to download it, the file was corrupt. The whole card was corrupt.
Yeah, the whole SD card was corrupt.
No, that's
I couldn't get it off the camera. I couldn't play it back on the camera. I couldn't take it out and put it in my computer. I took the card out, put it in my computer, tried to put it in my laptop. I tried, you know, I'm a computer person, you know. So I'm going to try every avenue to try to read that damn card, you know, and go through every little trick in the book. And, oh, it was corrupt.
That's terrible.
So it caused us to go back again anyway. But we didn't have that same experience with the EMF meter.
No, but we had a different experience.
You know.
Yeah, we walked a little more of the trails and down towards the river more. And one of the trails, when coming up from the river back up to where the mounds are, it is a constant curve. So as you're walking along, behind you, you got the tree lines in it. You know, you can turn around and look, and the path will curve back towards behind the tree lines.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought I seen somebody following us. It looked like a shadow following us, and I couldn't make out the person itself. But when I turned around to look, they, of course, were gone. So
yeah, nobody was down there either.
And there wasn't anybody else down there.
The people that were in the other cars were over by the buildings, clear on the other side of this park.
Yeah.
You know. But it's got a very rich Native American history to it, and kind of a bloody history. But the thing that there's this one where there was an Indian princess Indian burial mound, and they've got it marked with a stone, like a headstone, and all of this. And they say if you go up there at night and you're facing the stone, reading it, you'll hear her shell. She had belts made out of shells. You'll hear them rattling behind you. And when you turn around, you know, nothing's there, of course. Now, here's the story. This is, you know, the story behind it and the facts. During a dig, they found these princesses. That's Native American princess. They figured she was a princess because of the way she was buried or whatever. They removed her bones.
The stuff she was buried with.
They removed her bones, left the shell belts, removed her bones, and took her down to a museum in Milwaukee. The Native American tribes from the Wisconsin area, all the different tribes, protested outside that museum. And to this day, her remains are still in that museum, but in storage now.
Oh,
yeah.
That's just asking for problems.
Yeah.
And that's why all the activities up there about her belts shaking behind people.
Yep. Total disturbance of that area. So anyway.
I mean, that's like a paranormal.
I do apologize.
That's like a paranormal no-no.
I had to use the bathroom. I've been holding it for a while. So.
So, go ahead, Mark.
No, I'm waiting for you.
I don't know what I got.
You were gonna say.
No, I don't have nothing. I was gonna say. I was getting ready for the time.
Yeah, it is about that time. So, Ben, there is just one more thing, though. I'll bring us back to the Beast of Bray Road. Something I was curious about. In all your time, are you a hunter at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So in all your time being out in the woods and stuff, or out in the areas, have you ever known of a predator that is a five toed, seven pad predator?
I have not run into that here, but I haven't heard a story about it either, so I couldn't say.
Just kind of curious because that's one of the things that was shown to us when we went to the Beast of Bray Road. And I have an actual picture of it. The guy was explaining it. His hands are bigger than mine. And he says that when he placed his hand near the print that he had found, that it was pretty much, you know, would fill his hand. That's a pretty significant size print.
Is it like narrow and wide, or is it like wide?
Well, if you'd like to see it, I got a picture of it. So I can
stick around after we go off here.
So if you want to stick around for a couple minutes.
We're keeping the Bray Road stuff kind of under wraps.
We're trying to make a documentary out of it.
That's fine.
So, and we got plans to go back.
But yeah, it's just that, you know, I wanted opinions from other people that are hunters and have known of predators and stuff like that.
So as we go off the air, tomorrow's Thanksgiving. Everybody stay safe and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
I mean, I know it's not going to be the best because you shouldn't gather. Right,
yeah, you're
now.
Not supposed That's to gather. You're not supposed to get together and stuff.
Not the big get-togethers and stuff, but you know, we've got all these teleconferences, so try to make use of that to say hello to your loved ones.
Pardon me.
Or something. You know, there's social media out there.
Yeah, you got social media, you got StreamYard, you got Zoom, you got, you know, all these different ways of connecting.
Friday's Black Friday, and Friday also we have a guest. His name is Stan Fikes. He's from Web Paranormal Group out of Alabama. So he'll be with us on Friday. So everybody stay safe, and we'll see you Friday.
Yep. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Amen.